So we are still in Ezra, and we are in the reign of Darius, or Darius, depending on how you pronounce it. Building of the temple is stopped because the Samaritans, or as Josephus calls them, the Cuthians, sent a note to Cambyses saying, if this gets built, you're never going to have anything on the west side of the river. And so Cambyses ordered the work stopped. And it begins again under Darius. So we're in Ezra 5. We're also going to be in Josephus 11:3-2. The question was, who was Josephus? Josephus was a Jew. He was a general of the Jewish forces during the Roman conquest in 70 AD. He was captured by the Romans and made a slave. He was a historian. So while he was a Roman slave, he wrote a history of the Jewish people. So it was written after 70 AD, and it starts at Genesis and goes all the way through where Josephus is. It is regarded as a very good and reliable parallel history. And one of the things we pointed out as we were going through this is there are differences between Ezra and Josephus. We pointed some of those out. And my perspective is where there is a conflict between Ezra and Josephus, Ezra's right. Just because Ezra is in the Bible and Josephus isn't. So that's the basis of my deciding. So, Ezra 5. Now the prophets Haggai and Zechariah, the son of Iddo, prophesied to the Jews who were in Judah and Jerusalem in the name of the God of Israel who was over them. Then Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Yeshua, the son of Jozadak, arose and began to rebuild the house of God that was in Jerusalem. And the prophets of God were with them, supporting them. So they are under edict by Cambyses, who is the previous Persian emperor, to stop. They don't yet have permission to start, but Cambyses is dead. And so the prophets, Haggai and Zechariah, say, get with it. And so they start again, and there's going to be a whole lot of drama involved with that. So let's go to Haggai. So in Haggai chapter 1, in the second year of Darius, the king, in the sixth month, on the first day of the month, the word of the Lord came by the hand of Haggai the prophet to Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and Joshua, the son of Jehozadak, the high priest. Thus says the Lord of hosts, these people say the time has not yet come to rebuild the house of the Lord. Then the word of the Lord came by the hand of Haggai the prophet. Is it a time for you yourselves to dwell in your paneled houses while this house lies in ruins? Now therefore, thus says the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. You have sown much and harvested little. You eat, but you will never have enough. You drink, but you never have your fill. You clothe yourself, but no one is warm. And the one who earns wages does so to put them in a bag with holes. Thus says the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Go up to the hills and bring wood and build the house, that I may take pleasure in it and that I may be glorified, says the Lord. You looked for much, and behold, it came to little. And when you brought it home, I blew it away. Why? Declares the Lord of hosts. Because of my house that lies in ruins, while each of you busies himself with his own house. Therefore, the heavens above you have withheld the dew, the earth has withheld its produce. And I have called for drought on the land and the hills, on the grain and the new wine and the oil, and on the ground that it brings forth, on man and beast and all their labors. The prophet is obviously speaking to all of Judah, but specifically to the leadership, and saying, you guys have been sitting on your blessed assurance, taking care of your own stuff, and you've neglected my stuff. And time to get going. Zechariah says much the same thing in slightly different terms. So go to Zechariah. And this is in the eighth month in the second year of Darius. So again, same time frame. The word of the Lord came to the prophet Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, son of Iddo, saying, the Lord was very angry with your fathers. Therefore say to them, thus declares the Lord of hosts, Return to me, says the Lord of hosts, and I will return to you, says the Lord of hosts. Do not be like your fathers, to whom the former prophets cried out. Thus says the Lord of hosts, return from your evil ways and from your evil deeds. But they did not hear or pay attention to me, declares the Lord. Your fathers, where are they? And the prophets, they live forever. But my words and my statutes, which I commanded my servant the prophets, did they not overtake your fathers? So they repented and said, as the Lord of hosts proposed to deal with us for our ways and deeds, so has he done with us. Now, this goes on, and we have the horses and all that kind of stuff. I'm not going to go farther in Zechariah. The prophecy of Haggai at the beginning is much clearer. The prophecy of Zechariah is a little bit more obscure. But the point that Ezra makes in chapter 5 is that those two prophets, between them, got Israel moving again. They, however, do not have permission. So then, in verse 3, at the same time, Tattenai, the governor of the province beyond the river, and Shethar, Bozenai, and their associates came to them and spoke to them thus, who gave you a decree to build this house and to finish this structure? They also asked him this, what are the names of the men who are building this building? But the eye of their God was on the elders of the Jews, and they did not stop them until the report should reach Darius, and then an answer be returned by letter concerning it. So they are still operating under the previous decree, and when the Jews start up with no instructions from the home office in Persia, they trudge down there and try and intimidate them by give us the names of everybody so we can report it to the police kind of thing. And the Jews ignore them. So they're going to send a letter back to Darius asking, what do we do with these people? Let me read the letter first, and then we'll go over to Josephus. And there's some disconnects here, but Josephus has got some really interesting stuff to say about this too. I'm in Ezra 5:6. This is a copy of the letter to Tattenai, the governor of the province beyond the river, and Shethar Bozenai, and his associates of the governors who were in the province beyond the river, sent to Darius the king. They sent him a report in which was written as follows. To Darius the king, all peace. Be it known to the king that we went to the province of Judah, to the house of the great God that is being built with huge stones and timber is laid on the walls. This work goes on diligently and prospers in their hands. When we asked those elders and spoke to them thus, who gave you a decree to build this house and to finish this structure? We also asked them their names for their information, that we might write down the names of their leaders. In other words, we're going to report the bad guys to you and you can take action on them. And this was their reply to us. We are the servants of the God of heaven and earth, and we are rebuilding the house that was built many years ago, which a great king of Israel built and finished. But because our fathers had angered the God of heaven, he gave them into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon the Chaldean, who destroyed this house and carried away the people to Babylonia. However, in the first year of Cyrus the king of Babylon, Cyrus the king made a decree that this house of God should be rebuilt, and the gold and silver vessels of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple, that was in Jerusalem and brought into the temple of Babylon, these Cyrus the king took out of the temple of Babylon, and they were delivered to one whose name was Sheshbazzar, whom they had made governor. And he said to them, take these vessels, go, and put them in the temple that is in Jerusalem, and let the house of God be rebuilt on its site. Then this Sheshbazzar came and laid the foundations of the house of God that is in Jerusalem. And from that time until now, it has been in building and is not yet finished. Therefore, if it seems good to the king, let search be made to the royal archives there in Babylon to see whether a decree was issued by Cyrus the king for the building of this house in Jerusalem, and let the king send us his pleasure in this matter. So these Jews are, they say they've got a decree to do it. We don't know anything about it. You tell us. So now I'm going to switch over to Josephus. I'm in Josephus 11, chapter 3, verse 1. After the slaughter of the Magi, who upon the death of Cambyses attained the government of the Persians for a year, those families who were called the seven families of the Persians appointed Darius, the son of Astyages, to be their king. Now, what I don't know here is the slaughter of the Magi, whether that had to do with Daniel and the lion's den. Timing isn't right, because it says here that after the slaughter of the Magi, Darius was selected. Darius was the one that fed these officials to the lion, so the timing isn't right there. I otherwise don't know what the slaughter of the Magi is. So it made Darius, the son of Astyages, to be their king. Now he, while he was a private man, had made a vow to God that if he came to be the king, he would send all the vessels of gold that were in Babylon to the temple in Jerusalem. Now it also fell out that about this time Zerubbabel, who had been made governor of the Jews that had been in captivity, came to Darius from Jerusalem. So what's happened here is Cambyses, the previous emperor, told him to stop. They stayed stopped for a number of years. Zerubbabel comes back to Jerusalem in the first year of Darius. The Jews that had been in captivity came to Darius from Jerusalem, for there had been an old friendship between him and the king. So Zerubbabel knew Darius before Zerubbabel went to Jerusalem with the exiles to begin the rebuilding. So Zerubbabel is the secular leader of the returning exiles. The comment was, it doesn't seem like a Jewish name. He is Jewish. He is the leader of the Jewish community. He was probably born in Babylon and was given a Babylonian name, if you will, just as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were given Babylonian names. But he is a Jew, and he is the leader of the Jewish exiles in return. So the previous emperor, Cambyses, is dead. And so Zerubbabel goes back to Persia and arrives there in the first year of Darius. Darius, as I was reading here in Josephus, had made a vow to himself that if he became prominent, he was going to send stuff back to Jerusalem. Apparently, Darius and Zerubbabel were friends before Zerubbabel left with all the exiles to go south. The genealogy of Zerubbabel is in Ezra 3:2. Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, with his kingdom, they built the altar of the God of Israel. So he is a Jew. So now he's gone back and he has renewed acquaintance with Darius. So let me get back to Josephus 11, chapter 3. And I'm in the first verse. So now it fell out that about this time Zerubbabel, who had been made governor of the Jews that had been in captivity, came to Darius from Jerusalem. For there had been an old friendship between him and the king. He was also, with two others, thought worthy to be guard of the king's body, and obtained that honor which he hoped for. So what he's done is he has come back, renewed his acquaintance with Darius, and has been made Darius's bodyguard. Okay, one of three. I'm not going to read all this, but what happens is we have another case where a foreign emperor can't sleep. You remember in the case of Esther and Mordecai, Ahasuerus couldn't sleep and got up and said, somebody read to me. And they brought the chronicles of the kingdom, and he found out Mordecai had saved his life and so forth. Well, here we have another king who can't sleep. And so he calls his three bodyguards in and says, I'll tell you what, I'm going to propose you a riddle. And the one of you who can answer that riddle the best, you're going to be my cousin, you know, just all sorts of great stuff. So he proposes this riddle to them, and it's a question of what's stronger. And so the first guy, he says, all right, these four things, which is stronger? The first guy says is wine. And of course, this guy will come up with all the reasons why wine is the strongest. You know, it makes people dizzy and all that kind of stuff. The second guy he asks, who is strongest? The king. So wine, the king, and the third guy, who is Zerubbabel, he says, women or truth. So the three guys cogitate. King goes back to sleep. The next morning, these three guys come in, and he says, all right, what'd you come up with? And the first guy says, this is why wine is the strongest. And he gives his all his reasons why wine is the strongest. Everybody goes, yes, golf clap, you know. And then the next guy comes up and says, this is why the king is strongest. Everybody says, yeah, golf clap. Then Zerubbabel gets up and says, this is why women are strongest. And he proceeds to describe everybody comes into the world by a woman. And men will give up all sorts of stuff for a desirable woman. And then he finally says, but truth is the strongest of all, because all of these other things eventually perish, but truth never does. And so everybody, yay, big clap. So what Darius does then is says, wow, really cool. In addition to being able to sit beside me, be my cousin, dressed in all these fine stuff, I'm going to give you one more thing. And so that's where we're going to pick it up. Now bear in mind, this is in the first year of Darius. There's all this with Zerubbabel and so forth is happening. And you remember the prophet said start building again in the second year of Darius. Keeping the time straight helps make the story better. So now we're down to Antiquities 11, volume 3, verse 8. So the king was pleased with what he had said and arose and kissed him, and wrote to the toparchs and the governors, and enjoined them to conduct Zerubbabel and those that were going with him to build the temple. He also sent letters to those rulers that were in Syria and Phoenicia to cut down and carry cedar trees from Lebanon to Jerusalem, and to assist them in building the city. He also wrote to them that all the captives who go to Judea should be free, and he prohibited his deputies and governors to lay any taxes upon the Jews. He also permitted that they should have all the land that they could possess themselves without tribute. In other words, the Jews get to go back. They're not getting taxed. They get all the land they want. And, well, by the way, you guys up in Lebanon, cut down cedars and get them to them. All the building material they need. He also permitted them to offer their appointed sacrifices, that whatever the high priest and the priest wanted, and those sacred garments wherein they used to worship God, should be made at his own charge. In other words, make priestly garments. I'll pay for it. And that the musical instruments which the Levites used in singing hymns to God should be given to them. Moreover, he charged them that portions of land should be given to those who guarded the city and the temple, as also a determinate sum of money every year for their maintenance. In other words, give them a place to build land and give them a stipend. And withal he sent his vessels. And all that Cyrus intended to do before relating to the restoration of Jerusalem, Darius also ordained should be done accordingly. So he went back and got the decree of Cyrus, said, yeah, do all that too. Now, it is about 5 months travel time from Persian palace around to Jerusalem. So when Zerubbabel realizes what's going on, the time to get that word to Jerusalem is at least 5 months. Well, the prophets jumped in there and said, get started. Now, pretty obvious to me that God was watching. And as soon as Darius signed the decree, he told his prophets, all right, move them, get them going. At least I think that's what happened. So that's a bunch of stuff that doesn't show up in Ezra, but is background, if you will. We're back now, chapter 6 of Ezra. Then Darius the king made a decree. And a search was made in Babylonia in the house of the archives where the documents were stored. And in Ecbatana, the capital that is in the province of Media, a scroll was found in which was written a record. In the first year of Cyrus the king issued a decree concerning the house of God at Jerusalem. Let the house be rebuilt, the place where sacrifices were offered, and let its foundation be retained, and its height shall be 60 cubits, and its breadth 60 cubits. With 3 layers of great stones and 1 layer of timber, let the cost be paid from the royal treasury. And also let the gold and silver vessels of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar took out of the temple that is in Jerusalem, brought to Babylon, be restored and brought back to the temple that is in Jerusalem. Each to its place, you shall put them in the house of God. Now therefore, Tatani, governor of the province beyond the river, Shethar-Boznai, and your associates, the governors who are in the province beyond the river, keep away. Let the work on this house of God alone. Let the governor of the Jews and the elders of the Jews rebuild the house of God on its site. This is back off, leave them alone, let them do what they're doing. And interestingly, the parallel one in Josephus is even more blunt. In Josephus, there are a couple of these exchanges back and forth. In Ezra, there's only the one, but there are back and forth exchanges a couple of times. One of the things that is in Josephus, which is not in Darius, is that the Samaritans will write back and say, they're building a fortress. If they get a fortress here, you're never going to be able to get tribute from this side of the river, O king. The comment was, they're also said they're building a wall. That was the first one that Cambyses got. And they weren't building a wall. That will come later. But the Samaritans, according to Josephus, go through about three iterations of this, as opposed to the one that is in Ezra. The results are always the same, however. So Ezra 6:6. Now therefore, Tatenai, governor of the province beyond this river, Shethar-Boznai, and your associates, the governors who are in the province beyond the river, keep away. Let the work on this house of God alone. Let the governor of the Jews and the elders of the Jews rebuild this house of God on its site. Period, period, period. Those are all simple declarative sentences. Verse 8. Moreover, I make a decree regarding what ye shall do for these elders of the Jews for the rebuilding of this house of God. The cost is to be paid to those men in full and without delay from the royal revenue, the tribute of the province from beyond the river. And whatever is needed, bulls, rams, or sheep for burnt offerings to the God of heaven, wheat, salt, wine, or oil, as the priests in Jerusalem require, let it be given to them day by day without fail, that they may offer pleasing sacrifices to the God of heaven and pray for the life of the king and his sons. I also make a decree that if anyone alters this edict, a beam shall be pulled out of his house, and he shall be impaled on it, and his house shall be made a dunghill. May the God who has caused his name to dwell there overthrow any king or people who shall put a hand to alter this, or to destroy this house of God that is in Jerusalem. I, Darius, make a decree. Let it be done with all diligence. Now, I'm going to go back to Josephus. I'm in Josephus 4, chapter 3. But when the Samaritans, who were still enemies to the tribes of Judah and Benjamin, heard the sound of the trumpets. Okay, now what's going on is the temple has been finished. It's built. It has been dedicated. It's up and running. And the Jews are celebrating. But when the Samaritans, who were still enemies of the tribes of Judah and Benjamin, heard the sound of the trumpets, they came running together and desired to know what was the occasion of this tumult. And when they received that it was from the Jews who had been carried captive to Babylon and were rebuilding their temple, they came to Zerubbabel and to Jeshua and to the heads of the families and desired that they would give them leave to build the temple with them. Okay, we've already seen that. And to be partners with them in its building. For they said, we worship their God, and especially pray to him, and are desirous of their religious settlement. And this ever since Shalmaneser, the king of Assyria, transplanted us out of Cuth and Media to this place. When they said thus, Zerubbabel and Yeshua the high priest and the heads of the families of the Israelites replied to them that it was impossible for them to permit them to be their partners, whilst they only had been appointed to build the temple at first by Cyrus and now by Darius, although it was indeed lawful for them to come and worship there. So you can't help us build it, but you can absolutely come and worship. If they pleased, and they could allow them nothing but that in common with them, which was common with all other men. In other words, anybody in the world can come and worship. So can you. That's the gist of it. For when the Cuthians heard this, for the Samaritans have that appellation, they had indignation at it and persuaded the nations of Syria and the governors of the same matter as they had done formerly in the days of Cyrus and again in the days of Cambyses afterwards, to put a stop to the building of the temple and to endeavor to delay and protract the Jews in their zeal about it. Now, at this time, Sisinnes, the governor of Syria and Phoenicia, and Shathrabazanes, with certain others, came up to Jerusalem and asked the rulers of the Jews by whose grant it was that they built the temple in this manner, since it was more like to a citadel than a temple. So this thing is made out of stone, 60 cubits by 60 cubits. Man, that looks to us like a fortification. Who said you could do this? And remember earlier, the decree of Cyrus specified 60 cubits, 60 cubits, stone, and all that kind of stuff. So they're just doing what was told, but they're looking for a problem. So what they're going to do is send another letter back to Persia saying, you told them they could build a temple. They're building a fortress. You sure you want this to happen, O king? And the answer that they get back was equally direct. When Darius found this book among the record of Cyrus, in other words, he went back and he checked Cyrus, he wrote this answer to the Sisinnes and his associates whose confidence were there. King Darius, to Sisinnes, the governor, and to Shathrabazanes, sendeth greeting. Having found a copy of this epistle among the records of Cyrus, I have sent it to you, and I will that all things be done written therein. Farewell. Pretty direct. Cyrus had a general policy that sent all peoples back to their native land and let them reestablish their worship for order in the kingdom and they could bless the king. Darius certainly knows the power of God from Daniel and the stories. And it isn't clear whether Cyrus is a polytheist or a monotheist because, again, the Persians recognized that Jehovah is a big deal, but it isn't clear that they recognize him as being the only one. As I say, this back and forth happens a couple times in Josephus. All right, so we're all the way down to verse 13 in Ezra, 6:13. When according to the word sent by Darius the king, to Tanai, the governor of the province beyond the river, Shethar-Bozenai, and their associates did with all diligence what Darius the king had ordered. And the elders of the Jews built and prospered through the prophesying of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the son of Iddo. They finished their building by the decree of the God of Israel and the decree of Cyrus and Darius and Artaxerxes, king of Persia. And this house was finished on the third day of the month of Adar, in the sixth year of the reign of Darius the king. And the people of Israel, the priests and the Levites and the rest of the returned exiles celebrated the dedication of this house with great joy. They offered at the dedication of the house of God 100 bulls, 200 rams, 400 lambs, and as a sin offering for all Israel, 12 male goats, according to the number of the tribes of Israel. And they set the priests in their divisions and the Levites in their divisions for the service of God in Jerusalem, as it is written in the book of Moses. Now, that is the incident that causes the Samaritans to come down there and say, what's going on? And this is where Josephus is a little bit out of order, because if we go back in Josephus to book 4, chapter 3, you remember when the temple is dedicated, everybody's cheering and blowing ram horns, big hullabaloo. But the old men who had seen the previous temple wept. It is in Ezra, but in Josephus it says the reason they wept is because the glory of this new temple was nothing compared to the one that had been destroyed. So their weeping was because we couldn't do as good a job, didn't have the resources that Solomon had, and that isn't clear in the book of Ezra. The other part of that is according to Ezra, the weeping happened when the foundation was laid. According to Josephus, we have weeping when the thing is finished because it isn't nearly as glorious as what had been lost. I mean, Josephus 4:2, but the wailing of the old men and of the priests on account of the deficiency of this temple in their opinion, if compared with that which had been demolished, overcame the sounds of the trumpets and the rejoicing of the people. So they were weeping and wailing because we got a temple, but it's not like what we lost. So I'm in Ezra 6:19. In the 14th day of the first month, the returned exiles kept the Passover. For the priests and the Levites had purified themselves together. All of them were clean. What that tells me is somehow they got a red heifer. Ezra is silent on that, but I don't know whether they started with a fresh heifer or they somehow found some of the ashes of a previous heifer and mixed it in. I just don't know anything about that, but clearly they did all that. And there's plenty of time for that because they've been building and doing this for several years. So on the 14th day of the first month, the returning exiles kept the Passover. For the priests and the Levites had purified themselves together. All of them were clean. So they slaughtered the Passover lamb for all the returned exiles, for their fellow priests and for themselves. It was eaten by the people of Israel who had returned from exile, and also by everyone who had joined them and separated himself from the uncleanness of the peoples of the land to worship the Lord, the God of Israel. They kept the feast of unleavened bread 7 days with joy, for the Lord had made them joyful and had turned the heart of the king of Assyria to them, so that he aided them in the work of the house of God, the God of Israel. What I am assuming that means is the Assyrian king also got reestablished under Cyrus. So Assyria is once again a nation. What I'm assuming is happening there is under Cyrus, remember the idea was send people back to where they came from, let them worship their own gods. So Assyria would have been possibly going at that point as a nation. During all of this time, you have had massive numbers of Jews traveling through Assyria on their way down to rebuild the temple. One of the things that may be happening here, this is a speculation on my part, is just as Cyrus wanted to gain favor with the God of Israel, perhaps the king of Assyria also wanted to gain favor with the God of Israel, so he sent some help along with him. That's a guess. As we've been saying all along, the king of Assyria had nothing to do with permission to build. That was the king of Persia. So that's what I'm assuming that is. So we're not going to go on to chapter 7 because that's sort of a shift in subject. Next, we're going to get Ezra, who is going to come and get a bunch of things sorted out as far as the behavior of the exiles upon return.